I'm happy now to welcome to the program authors Doug Preston, Hampton Sides, and Anne Hillerman. They are all taking part in the 2011 Tony Hillerman Writers Conference, which is happening this November 10th through 12th. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Anne, tell us what this conference is all about.
We started the conference, I guess about 10 years ago, in honor of my dad, who was the mystery writer Tony Hillerman. And we also, as in addition to the conference, we set up a couple prizes to honor Dad. But the main point of the conference was to celebrate New Mexico authors and to just kind of shine the light on people, both people who were writing mysteries sort of in my dad's tradition, and also nonfiction writers, because as you know, my dad had started out as a journalist.
And we have here people who are both fiction and nonfiction writers, I guess everybody, although Hampton, have you written fiction yourself?
I tried once and my editor told me to take a hike pretty much, so I'm sticking with nonfiction.
Now, Doug Preston, you are both a journalist, a fiction writer, and a nonfiction writer. The latest book that I've been reading of yours is called The Monster of Florence, which we will be talking about in a few weeks in more detail on this program. But I wanted to ask you, what are the differences between writing a story like The Monster of Florence, which is a true nonfiction crime story, and writing a fiction crime story?
Well, when you're writing nonfiction, you have the unpleasant duty to tell the truth. And sometimes the truth is very messy, and it's hard to make it into a good story, but you really don't have the option of rearranging things. So it's funny, when I'm writing nonfiction, I keep thinking, gosh, I wish I were writing a novel. And then when I'm writing a novel, I think, oh, I wish I were writing nonfiction so I could have some kind of structure here. So they're both difficult in their own ways.
Hampton, what about you? You write long-form nonfiction, Hellhound on His Trail, which was about the assassination of Martin Luther King, the latest book that you and I have talked about a couple of times. You use the techniques of fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that narrative nonfiction really strives to do a lot of the things fiction does in the sense of looking for a story arc that is pleasing, developing characters, trying to figure out the pacing so that it is a pleasurable experience to sit down and read. A lot of the techniques of fiction go directly into the best narrative nonfiction. The only difference is that part that Doug was talking about. You can't make anything up. And I find that it is an unpleasant duty sometimes, but it's also true that when you get a hold of the right kind of story, the truth is much more interesting than fiction, and also more compelling because you know it's true, because it happened, because it could happen again, perhaps. There's definitely a lot of crossover and sort of the membrane between fiction and nonfiction is not, let's say it's semi-permeable. You know, it goes right back and forth.
Now, Anne, you are perhaps following in your father's footsteps. You're working on a novel now, having done more nonfiction in the past.
Oh, my gosh. And it gives me tremendous appreciation for people like Doug who can write fiction. I think I underestimated how difficult it is to keep all the characters and plot ideas in your head, but I'm having a good time with it. It's really stretching me, and I have a couple nonfiction projects on the back burner, and I'm telling myself I'm going to give this novel till the end of the year, and then I'm going to get back to what I know how to do better, which is the nonfiction. One reason we were so glad to have Doug and Hampton come to our conference is that we always get people who are wanting to make the transition from nonfiction to fiction, and we thought both of them would have such really great insights in terms of how you tell a story, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. As Hampton was saying, basically the elements are the same.
Right.
Hellhound on His Trail was one of the most gripping stories I've ever read, and it was just incredible. I mean, it's an amazing book, but what really impressed me was that he was able to make it even more gripping than a fictional story like it. I mean, it was just amazing, and I'm surprised to have Hampton say that he had trouble writing fiction, because I thought that, you know, he uses the techniques of fiction so well in nonfiction. I think he'd write a great novel.
Well, I'll probably give it a try one of these days when money isn't such an issue, you know, raising three kids and putting them through college and all that. I definitely do want to try my hand at it later on because, like, as we've said, and I think we're saying it in multiple different ways, is many of the disciplines are the same. It's not like they're completely different creatures.
Right. Now, let's talk for a moment about the conference. It's happening November 10th through 12th, and a bunch of people will be there. Sandy Ault, who is a mystery writer, we have her on every time she comes out with a new book, which is every year or two. And let's see, David Morrell will be there, and Doug Preston and Hampton Sides. What actually happens during these 3 days of the conference?
Well, we're going to start with a pre-conference workshop with Sandy, which is going to be a lot of hands-on writing. People will not only get to listen, but actually try their hand at the new skills that she's teaching and then read it to each other. And then on Saturday, we're focusing on the craft of writing. We're going to have novelist Joanne Mapson, who lives in Santa Fe, who is very well regarded both as a teacher and as sort of a guru of women's fiction, is going to talk to us at breakfast. And then Doug is going to talk to us about just techniques you can use. I think what you were saying about pacing, Hampton, how to keep the story moving. And then we're going to, Hampton's going to talk to us about the art and craft of narrative nonfiction. This is all on Friday. And then we're going to have a couple panels, one about how to create good bad guys. And we're having both fiction people and nonfiction people on that panel because good villains are what makes good stories work. Rather they're, the way Hampton, the wonderful job he did in Hellhound on His Trail of sort of... focusing on the traits that make that character so, so compelling. Or if it's a bad guy that David Morrell is inventing. And then the next day we're going to talk about the business of writing.
Yes, which is very important and changing as publishing changes, and we could talk about that to the end of time. But let's go back to this question of good, bad guys. Doug Preston, when you're creating a villain, how do you do it?
Well, I think a really good villain in fiction is almost more important than having a really good guy or protagonist. The villain has to be three-dimensional. The villain can't be completely evil. He or she has to have some good qualities. Otherwise, they aren't as scary. But a person who has some good qualities who is also really horribly evil and psychotic is a lot more frightening than just someone who's a one-dimensional bad person. Hellhound on His Trail had a villain who was absolutely horrifying in almost every way, except that you get so close to him that you start feeling this sickening sense of partial identification with him. I mean, you can just see into his mind enough to see that he's not 100% bad. He's 99% bad, and there's that 1% that is makes him a real human being.
Right, and I think, when you say that the ones who are multidimensional are scary, I guess that's because they're more like us in a way, and but for the grace of God, there go we.
Exactly. I think one of the great failed characters in Shakespeare was Iago, because you never quite understand why he is the way he is. He seems perfectly evil in every way. And, maybe the Shakespearean scholars are going to kill me for that. But I do think that you have to understand a person's motivation. Most people do evil thinking they're doing something right, that they're doing something good. And that makes it all the scarier.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
What draws you, and this is something we could ask to all of you, or to really to any mystery writer, any person who does a murder mystery, is what draws you to actually wanting to explore the psyche of somebody who in real life you really probably would not want to know?
Well, I guess I'm... Well, there's something about human evil that is ineffable. It's almost fundamentally incomprehensible. I mean, when you look at horrific evil, like the person who assassinated Martin Luther King Jr., it makes you wonder, how could someone do that? What is the psychological dynamic inside that person's head, and that fascinates me. I do think it tells us something about human nature that's universal, and that's what, you know, my thrillers explore, and also what my nonfiction has explored, and Hampton's book also explores the same thing.
I was going to say, and the monster of evil, I mean, the monster of Florence is someone that you explored and tried to even identify this guy. You obviously came to understand a little bit about the workings of this criminal in Florence.
Yeah, that's a character, and again, we're going to talk about the book in more detail, but just to give people a teaser about it, this book, The Monster of Florence, you, Doug Preston, went to Florence hoping to live happily in this beautiful Italian city and write a murder mystery that involved a Renaissance painting, and instead you came across a much more compelling actual mystery, namely a killer who would kill young lovers in their cars in the Italian countryside around Florence, and you became part of this drama yourself, which is also, I mean, I was reading the part about where the detectives called you in, sweating bullets. I can't even imagine how you felt.
Well, I felt like I'd fallen into one of my novels. It was so strange, you know, as a journalist, you have a distance from your subject. And it was awful. One day I was just walking through the streets of Florence, and the police called me on my cell phone, and they said, "Where are you? We are coming to get you right now." And that began this nightmare where I fell into my own story. And suddenly it wasn't just a journalist, you know, with the proper distance from his subject, but all of a sudden I was being interrogated and being accused of being an accessory to murder, of knowing the monster of Florence, of protecting him, of being involved in trying to frame an innocent person for being the monster of Florence. Was the craziest experience of my life.
Hampton, what about you? I mean, you write books about people who are also, well, I mean, James Earl Ray, but also Blood and Thunder. I mean, Kit Carson, not everybody's hero.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Kit Carson's case, I think you had a person who was sort of the villain and the hero, the protagonist and the antagonist, all in one person. The contradictions of his personality were so enormous. In certain circles, in certain terms, he was a hero. In other circles, especially in Navajo circles, he is considered a genocidal maniac. And that dichotomy was fascinating to me, and it's one of the kinds of tension that I think drives that book. It's like, what is he going to do next? He's capable of this extraordinary violence, and is a creature of a world that I don't fully understand. I don't think any of us understand exactly how violent it was to be alive in New Mexico in the 1800s. Sometimes it's not so simple creating a bad guy and then a good guy. It might be the same person all wrapped into one personality.
And when I think of that Blood and Thunder book, I imagine you with like a room full of other research on Kit Carson and having to go through all of that and decide which of those details would fit in your book. I think that must have been such a challenge, and you handled it magnificently.
Well, thanks. I mean, I do find that that the research, although it's really the hardest part of doing these narrative histories, it's also the most fun because... Well, let's just be honest, at least for me and for most writers, writing a first draft is really hard work. And I tend to want to put that off until the very last minute. And perhaps it's a form of avoidance behavior or, you know, procrastination, but I will research a book probably to the point where it's literally the 11th hour. So I have to write my books really fast. But it's, like I say, the research and traveling to these places and getting to know the physical landscapes that these people walked on and among, you know, this is the joy of doing nonfiction. It's the fun part.
Yeah. And I think in good fiction, too, that same kind of research in Doug's books, mm-hmm. I mean, feeling like you are at the scene.
Right.
Makes the stories come alive.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think good nonfiction has to make landscape a character almost. At least I tend to do that. New Mexico and the landscape around the Four Corners is very much emerges, I think, as a character in this story of Blood and Thunder. And with Hellhound, I definitely tried to capture the atmosphere of Memphis, my hometown, where I was born and raised, and tried to turn that into a character, in a sense, that you both love and hate. You know, it's not necessarily a beautiful place or majestic scenery. It's somehow trying to find the details that make a place come alive on the page.
Yeah.
Now, Doug Preston, when you are starting to write a thriller or a mystery or murder mystery, how do you begin your research as opposed to a nonfiction book? How do you research a novel?
Well, a lot of my fictional books began as nonfiction. I, you know, used to write for the New Yorker magazine and other magazines, and often in writing an article, I would think, gee, this would make a great novel, and then it would, you know, eventually become a novel. And it's interesting, you know, getting back to Tony Hillerman, who's one of my favorite mystery writers, I don't think he could have written his books if he hadn't started out as a journalist. I mean, his details are so beautifully observed in his novels, his sense of character, his sense of place, his knowledge of New Mexico, and all that, you know, came from him being a journalist. That's what made him one of the things that made him such a wonderful fiction writer. And so I do think, you know, to all those people who write nonfiction, who want to move into fiction, I would say they've got a great advantage over those people who just want to start as fiction writers. You know, I really think that, you know, the eye of a journalist, the ability to interview people, the ability to research, the ability to pick out all those little details among the welter of the overwhelming, you know, tidal wave of information that comes into you as a journalist, you've got to pick out just a few things, all lend themselves to writing fiction.
Ann Hillerman, are your father's books... I mean, they certainly must be influential because I'm assuming you were reading them as he was writing them when you were young. Is that true?
Well, his first one didn't come out until I was in college, so I didn't really have a chance to read them when I was younger than that. But yeah, I always loved them. I think adding to what Doug was saying about how writing nonfiction helps with fiction, my dad spent about 20 years as a reporter, which meant lots of endless city council, county commission, school board meetings. So he listened to a lot of different people talking. And I think that really helps when it comes to writing dialogue.
Absolutely. Now, do you want to talk about what your novel is about, or is that secret until you're done?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit. My dad, as you know, had all these Navajo police detectives who were his characters.
Right.
And he had one character, Bernadette Manuelito. And he never did much with her. She was always sort of the sweet little girl sidekick, and then she married Jim Chi. And that just kind of bothered my feminist roots. I thought this officer needs to at least have one book where she is not rescued by Jim Chi, but where she solves the crime, where she is the hero, and maybe let her husband do a little supporting. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. I have to say, I feel like these characters are sort of my family.
I know. Well, there's this thing that happens. It happened more when I was a kid, but I would read a lot of novels when I was young, and when the book was closed, I missed them.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. I feel sort of like Chi and Leaphorn were my uncles.
Exactly. So, we are talking about the upcoming Tony Hillerman, it's called the Tony Hillerman Writers Conference. It's November 10th through 12th of this year. Now, who's the conference for? Aspiring writers, experienced writers?
There's a little something there for everybody. Most of our students tend to be people who aren't just rank beginners. Maybe they're people who've worked in a corporate situation and they've done a lot of writing, but not writing from their own hearts. Writing that they've made their living as writers, so now they'd like to write something for themselves.
Right.
And then some are people who have been working on fiction maybe pretty successfully. Maybe they've self-published or they've had little publishers buy their books, and they want to move on to the next level. They want to really be able to support themselves as writers. So they come to these conferences with specific agendas of not only getting the information that we offer, but also making contacts with other writers who have ideas for them and with our faculty people. the thing that we like about our conference is that it's a small conference. Usually we have less than 100 people. So people have a really wonderful opportunity to interact with each other and to get to know our faculty.
If people want to find out more about the conference, they can go to wordharvest.com. And is there a telephone number locally that people can call?
Sure. It's 505-471-1565.
And people can learn not only techniques of writing along the lines that we've been speaking, but also the business of writing, which is a whole other show which we will have to do at another time, but also a very important part of it.
Right. We have a lot of information on our website and also on our Facebook page.
Wordharvest.com. Anne Hillerman, Doug Preston, and Hampton Sides, thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR.